Sensibility podcast that explores all areas of financial planning and money mindset, helping you on your journey to wealth creation. Now, I'm your host, money mindset coach and financial advisor, Amy Baker. Before I begin, I'd love to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land in which we record on today, and would also like to pay my respects to the elders past and present. Now, all the information shared on this show must be considered general in nature, and we do recommend you seek professional financial advice from a licensed advisor should you need it. So let's get things rolling. Hold on to your hats. I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello and welcome back to Sensibility. I have an awesome guest with us. I'd love to welcome Nicole Gardner from Stellar Wealth. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Amy. So great to speak with you today. I'm really excited to be on your podcast. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've been loving what you've been doing on social media, both LinkedIn and Instagram. So anyone who is listening, that is the real money mama, like the what real dot money dot mama. Yeah, got it. Just because you are putting some really insightful content that's quite educational, and I'm all for financial empowerment. I don't like the term literacy. I think it's a bit negative. But when we're actually just putting it out there, what, you know, things that we really as financial planners come across, it's really so many ways empowering, and that's what I'm seeing you do, and it's incredibly impressive. So, and some of the things that recently you touched on, which I thought, now this is something we should be talking about more often, is when we're dealing with clients and investing and volatility and even timing the market, sometimes even getting them in the market, getting them confident to be investing. And I've sort of seen you touch on a few of these little topics. So I thought, let's just have a chat about that today. But before we do, I want to give you an opportunity just to share about yourself, your business, and where you're at right now with everything.
Absolutely. Well, started Stellar Wealth, which is my business, in October last year. So first 6 months of business with Stellar. Loving working for myself. It is the best decision I have ever made. As you would know, Amy, as a business owner yourself, there is a lot of work to do and it is hard, but I've never been one to shy away from a challenge. I actually thrive on challenges. So really enjoying it. It's been a lot more successful already than I expected it would be. Yeah, just really loving it. You know, being able to help the clients I want to help in the way that I want to help them. And I really think it's important for more women. Obviously, we need more women in financial advice, but the women who are in financial advice, I think I would love it if everyone did take the time to just consider the possibility of whether working for themselves was an option for them. And granted, it's not something for everyone and that's not suited for everyone and not everyone wants to do it. But I think if we had more women running businesses in financial advice, we'd start to see more advisors and we'd probably start to see more of that, you know, income parity and closure in the gender pay gap, which we have been seeing in financial services and banking. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I was just on a podcast before talking about the challenges of the working mother. And working, you know, in corporate, like this particular advisor also is now self-employed. But when she was fell pregnant with her second child, she was in that sort of probation period and had to have those conversations. And I think a lot of people forget that, you know, although we're choosing to have our careers and build, you know, sort of a name for ourselves as financial planners that could be for an employee in the corporate world, how challenging that is when we actually have our children. And one of the reasons why I became self-employed was because that juggle between, you know, work and family was incredibly demanding and challenging that I felt, well, if I am self-employed, I can rule my own sort of rule my own world, basically. I can pick my times. I also get to choose the clients I want to work with. I can work during school hours and then kids go to bed if I chose to. You know, that all changes, but it gives you that choice, which sometimes you don't have.
Absolutely. I think a big part of what we do as financial advisors is helping our clients achieve financial freedom. And a big part of that freedom comes down to being able to use your time in the way that you want to. And that's one of the things I love, as you've just explained perfectly. Being a business owner, I don't have to ask permission. If I want to go to the kids' school carnival, I can just go and plan my time how I want to. So I love that. to me, that's wealth, having those options to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, wealth means so many different things to so many different people. A lot of people think, oh, you guys just deal with helping people make money, but it's really, the crux of it is actually their goals and what's important to them. And it could be time and, you know, money buys time, things, and experiences. And time is part of the experience as well. But, you know, time for our children, time for our families, time for ourselves, that's actually wealthy.
Yeah.
Which is really important. I really love that you brought that up. And a nice segue, time when it comes to investing. You know, my son said to me the other day, he came home and he goes, hey, Mum, you're a financial planner. How do I make $3,000 really quickly? And I went, how much have you got to start investing and how long's the time frame? And the reality is, if, you know, when it comes to investing, it's usually a long-term plan. It's not, you don't expect I'm going to put $100 in something and I'm going to get $3,000 out. That's gambling.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think when it comes to investing, I think the key is to understand that market volatility is normal. That is a normal part of investing. And so there is always going to be short-term fluctuations in the market driven by factors like economic conditions, geopolitical events, investor sentiment. So like you said, Amy, you really need to have that long-term mindset and trying to time the market and reacting to these short-term fluctuations and volatility, it can lead to really poor investment decisions and really poor outcomes. So it is important to stay focused on the long-term goals and just stay invested through those ups and downs. I mean, when we look historically at the, you know, returns and the charts, this is factual data. You can see that it's always an upward trend. And those who do have that long-term focus and just remain disciplined throughout tend to be the ones who get rewarded at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. You posted a story around, I think, a 20-year-old who put, $100 a week or a month away. And by the time they got to, say, 65, it was well over $1.1 million. Is that actually a person? Was that just a scenario that you were using?
It's an example scenario. So I used Amy, person A, versus Bianca, person B. And to be honest, I just went to a compounding calculator. But I do have a lot of clients who are very similar to my examples of Amy and Bianca. So yeah, in that one, I talked about Amy, who invests from age 20, and she puts $200 a month in an investment that earns a 10% return. She does that every month until she gets to age 30. That's when she stops investing altogether, but she leaves that money sitting in the investment account. And that compounds and compounds. And by the time she gets to 65, I think it's actually 1.3 million. I cut her a little bit short. Yeah. So 1 million versus Bianca, who starts investing at age 40. Now she actually puts more money in the end. She puts in $60,000. So $200 every month from 40 to 65. She only has $267,000 when she gets to 65. So that just really highlights the importance compounding and time. So the sooner you can start investing, even just a small amount, the better, because it's all about time in the market.
Time in the market, not timing the market. And there was another story you shared around, you know, volatility we saw over the last couple of years have been incredibly challenging in the financial markets. For a business like yourself, like ours, where we focus on investment portfolio construction and investment advice, and there are times where people look at this and go, oh my God, I'm negative 10%. We actually were in the market, and the year before, 2020, it was very bullish. 21 hit a bit of a rocky road. But if you look at 2020, average returns for a growth portfolio in superannuation, for example, was sitting around 25 to 30%.
Correct.
But yeah. 2021, it was going into negative 10% territory. So the mental shift is actually going, well, look, I've just given back some of that cream, so to speak. Yeah. A lot of people go, put me in cash, and then when markets return, let's catch up. And it's like, you put it so eloquently that it doesn't work that way for multiple reasons. Can you just share some of those insights there?
Yeah, I think it's really important here as well to highlight the benefit of having a financial advisor. So there are so many studies and research that suggests investors who have a financial advisor in their corner, they actually tend to have returns of about 3 to 4% higher, or improved returns of about 3 to 4%. That's net after fees, than those solo investors who go it alone. And that's for a number of reasons. And the main one that you just touched on then is that behavioral coaching. So advisors can really help their clients and can help investors avoid those common pitfalls where we react with our emotions instead of our, I guess, logic and intelligence. And we react with emotions, and we can buy when the market is high and sell when it's low, which is the opposite of what we want to do. We all understand that the way to make money is to buy low and sell high, or not sell, just keep holding until you need to. So yeah, that behavioral coaching is really key in helping clients achieve better returns. But then there's a whole myriad of other things that advisors can help with. So asset allocation is really important. You know, advisors can help their clients build a diversified portfolio that's tailored to their risk tolerance and their goals. And that's really important to help manage the risk and spread the risk across the whole portfolio. And it can help achieve more consistent returns over time. And look, advisors, we've just got that market expertise, right? We've lived through the ups and downs. We know what works, we know what doesn't. We have access to research, to tools, to our own, you know, education and expertise. So our clients can, I guess, harness that and tap into that through us and just achieve those, you know, better returns and make more informed decisions. When you're going it alone, you don't have access to that. So these are all the reasons why, you know, advisors tend to do better.
100%. For those who aren't seeking advice or sitting on the fence around advice, and you've really hit the nail on the head about some of the things that we can help with when it comes to, you know, long-term goals. Even, and we've touched on a little bit there around risk profiling, asset allocation, which we'll come, I'll circle back to. One thing you also mentioned was you're just buying, you know, buying a lot of the market. If we're creating a portfolio for a client, there's certain fund managers that specifically are experts in that space that are doing that within the portfolio. So that takes away that thinking that you really need to know how to pick stock or how what fund managers to use or any of that, because that's what we're doing in the background. You know, we have our regular catch-ups with our fund managers and we're questioning their thesis on what they're doing and why they're doing it, especially in climates we've been in the last couple of years. It's really important to bring that. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, and, you know, rebalancing those portfolios as well. I mean, we know that as one asset class might perform really well because of a particular industry and a point in time, it's really important to rebalance that to make sure that we do stay within the right, you know, asset allocation and risk tolerance. And there can be a tendency to think, well, that's done really well, let's just leave it. But that's, you know, not always the smartest way to go when we invest.
No, we'll touch on that in a minute because that sort of is a great segue to going back to risk profiling and asset allocation. And I love talking to clients about this because especially when they're new and want to have a look at what they've already got, and, you know, they often think they haven't got much because it might just all be in super, or it's in their profit and super. And the question I always ask is, okay, so let's have a look at how your current super's invested, because it you understanding the purpose of the investment in the long term will help you better answer the questions when it comes to a risk profile and questionnaire, because that can throw people. Like my risk profile questionnaire will have the importance of inflation. Is your portfolio going to be outperforming inflation and extra? And that question was often overlooked until inflation became a problem. And the other one is how much do you need your cash or around tax? So some of those questions are really relevant to your risk profile. And some, like, do I need cash at all immediately for super fund? Not so relevant. So it's really important to understand why these questions are designed the way they are and have the conversation, not just about how they'll answer those questions, but what the purpose of the investment is in terms of its time frame.
That's exactly right. I mean, if the client has goals and we want to achieve a certain type of lifestyle in retirement, but we invest in a very, very conservative, you know, portfolio within super, we need to understand that we may not actually achieve our goals then. And the type of life that we want in retirement is not going to happen. So through financial advice, we can help our clients understand that. That's that education piece and the empowerment piece. And likewise, there are some clients who have a very high risk appetite, but they already have the means to have the type of lifestyle that they want in retirement. So it's then a question of saying, although you have a very high, you know, risk tolerance, do we need to take this level of risk when you can already achieve your goals with, you know, a more balanced approach? So just having that conversation so clients can make those more informed decisions is so important.
Doing that.
Thinking about it too.
Yeah. And one thing, you know, with when it comes to say time market, when you go into cash and how that, why that would be a not so great decision. First, of course, the obvious is you're crystallizing a loss.
Yeah.
We can't time the market, but it also bounces back to that point of the goal. If it's in super, why would we touch it?
Yeah.
And also, when it's not in super, what's the purpose? Are we in the wrong risk profile? Are you actually feeling a bit nervous? Are we needing to change the time frame in which you need this money, or are we need to draw on this money in a period of time?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So with that said, I want to sort of delve deeper in some of your experiences, maybe some cases you've come across your desk, or some of the inspiration that you've, you know, had to create your content. So have you had any, could you share any sort of massive surprises when it comes to a client case, whether they've thrown a spanner at the works with you, or you sort of weren't expecting this at all, and it's been a nice, pleasant surprise?
Oh, any massive surprises?
Oh, you've got me thinking now, Amy. I'm throwing you under the bus,
but that's okay. Look, I think, and I know I won't be alone here, I know that many advisors will have seen this, is coming out of COVID, many clients did come seeking financial advice, and having lived through the volatility of COVID, I mean, markets literally fell off a cliff, you know, in, was it March 2020? And a lot of clients, upon checking their super and seeing that balance go down and down and down and down, you know, panic sets in. And so many, many clients did, I guess, sell down their portfolio to cash, which then gives them that fixed number that doesn't go down anymore. So they feel that sense of security. What they have actually done, which you just explained, is they've crystallized a loss. So they've sold all of their holdings. They've sold their shares. They've sold their investments for a very low price because the market has plummeted. And then they come seeking financial advice, wondering, is now the right time to get back in the market? And of course, it's not about timing. It's just, yes, we need to get invested again. And any time now is typically the right time. But yeah, it's not a surprise because, you know, we're all human and we all do have those emotions. But it's, you know, disappointing for those clients because, you know, there was that massive recovery shortly after. And so missing out on those returns, disappointing for those clients. What has surprised me, and I don't know if you want to include this in the podcast, so you might want to edit this out, but the number of clients who I've been seeing lately who do have cryptocurrency as a part of their portfolio. Now, of course, as a financial advisor, I don't advise on cryptocurrency. I'd never recommend my clients to invest in that because it's highly volatile, it's unregulated, there's no safety measures in place, and, you know, there's no academic research or data. It doesn't generate any income. It's literally based on, will someone buy this off me for more money than I paid it? So it's not something that I class as a true investment because when we invest, we're looking for capital growth and we're looking for income, and it doesn't produce the income. However, there have been a lot of clients, which has surprised me, with cryptocurrency, and there has been some large gains in that space over the last few months. And so a lot of them are asking, what should I do with this now? And again, it comes back to, like you said, well, what are the goals? What are the plans? What do we want to do? So that's been a surprise.
been a surprise with me too. I have seen that as well. Yeah. I have a couple of clients with SMSFs that have gone and gone into that themselves. And if there's other advice or strategy that I've done for them as an advisor, I've got to get them to sign a form to say that there was no advice on that at all, just to cover myself. Because as you've pointed out, we are not licensed to give crypto advice. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with that. And I always feel it's a dangerous space because it's so unknown and unregulated. Managed is incredibly volatile. So right now, apparently it's doing really well, but who's to say it doesn't fall out of bed very quickly again. I'm curious, what advice did you give in regards to what to do at net to do with that investment at this point?
Oh, no advice. So look, I kind of have to section that off and say to clients, look, that's your, I guess, play money and you can do what you want with that. It's not part of our investment strategy. And I guess the only thing that I like to do in response to that, and I think the popularity of, you know, these types of investments is largely driven by, you know, media and influencers and what people are hearing and seeing on their social media. So that is why I guess I'm trying to put my own information out there, coming from a place of education, academic research, factual evidence, you know, just to give a bit of weight and balance to the knowledge that people have. You can't blame people for, you know, investing in things like that when that's all that they've been able to see and hear about. So just trying to give that other side of the
scale there. Time to get what we're saying. Speaking of which, we circled around risk profiling. And so I'm going to bring it back there because, you know, our set like crypto would be considered, I guess, a very gross asset. If that's real, all you get, there's no income, as you rightly put. And so what they're going to do is hopefully they get a capital gain. They would have to pay capital gains tax on that if they sold, but they're not in a normal diversified portfolio. So every single one of us, if we've got super, and I think majority of working population would have super in a diversified portfolio. And they're most likely gone into a default based on their year of birth.
Yeah.
Or they've selected based on what they felt was right. So let's then look out, like, let's go further into the risk profile questionnaire and what the differences are in terms of different types of risk profile portfolios. Can you go ahead?
No, did you have?
I was going to say, I'd love you to just share sort of what, you know, so just let us know what they are and then we can unpack more.
Yeah, so I mean, depending on the advisor and the advice firm, everyone has different names for these things. But, I mean, you have your aggressive or high growth, you have growth, balance, I guess more of a conservative, and then totally cash 100%, you know, conservative or defensive assets, I guess you'd call it. And look, if you're 100% invested in defensive assets, which is things like cash and fixed interest, then you are at risk of the value of your investments eroding. You know, cash can erode due to the power of inflation. So we all know that $100 today, when you go to the supermarket, doesn't buy you anywhere near what it would buy you even a year ago or 2 years ago. So that's why having, you know, 100% defensive portfolio can actually be quite risky because there is that risk of loss from the power of inflation. I guess, you know, a lot of my younger clients, you know, clients who sort of are in their 30s around that age, they tend to have a much higher risk tolerance. They understand that they're not accessing their super or their investments for quite a long time. So they have the time to live through those market fluctuations and rebound. Whereas my clients who are closer to retirement age, they absolutely understand that they're going to want to access these funds within the next, you know, 2-3 years, even less sometimes. So they do have a lot more of a conservative approach and they don't want to see those investments go down. But it's important for them still to understand that, yes, while you might have a more conservative, you know, perhaps a balanced risk profile, this money in your super is still going to be invested for quite a long time. So even if you're 65, you know, you still want that money to achieve some sort of return for you over the next 20 years, which can help you live off the returns and not use up so much of that, you know, capital, that principal balance. So yeah, having the education there again is really important to understand. Yes, while we're drawing on it, we still do want it to grow for the long term. How do you feel about
this? I am so with you 100%. I I read articles sometimes and I go, we don't really need to change your risk profile when you shift from super to pension, because you're going to be preserving that wealth long term. In fact, the only way we're going to get you to, say, create that legacy for some people, for their kids and their grandkids, is actually keeping it invested and only just, you know, drawing down a small percentage. The minimum is 4% that they have to draw down. And then sometimes that's actually enough. I sometimes need a little bit more, but it depends, of course, on cash flow as well. But there is only a small percentage of what they are using per year in, year out as an income stream. So I do feel that there is a bit of misconception there when it comes to risk profiling for retirement. Right. Because we'll get the asset allocation and the strategy and the investment strategy, which is something that you've got to rely on your financial advisor to do, and he's looking at certain fund managers that are going to focus on creating more dividend income, which is inside an account-based pension is fabulous because it's fully franked. You're getting extra coming into your back pocket, right, in that regard. But you also want to ensure that you're not 100% in Australian equities, because that's in 100% growth. And again, what you just sort of said is the education is key in this, saying, although we want this dividend income, we're still only exposing your portfolio to 25% of Australian equities, because we need to diversify. We actually just put our client newsletter out today because we got our February numbers in, right? And, you know, we talk about this to our clients all the time. It's like, growth performed this aggressive, or, balance performed this, our aggressive performed that. But at the moment, the Australian equity market is not as strong as the international market. And that's bringing back to your point you said earlier when it comes to, say, one particular asset class might be doing really well. So, for example, we might be saying that there's some strengths in numbers now with international market, with the US stabilizing their inflation numbers. They might be looking to bring their rates down this year. That's creating a nice, stronger return where, more confidence from a consumer point of view. And we're not there yet in Australia. But if you allowed that exposure just to go only to the US market, and then something else happens in the US, we know things around the corner. We've got debt reduction and all sorts of things. So all this stuff affects how the performance works. So balancing is another thing that we do as advisors. Even when you've got a soaring fund that's just killing it, it might be that we have to shave off some of that and spread that across.
Correct. Because a saying that I love is, last year's winners might not be next year's winners. And if you're chasing last year's winners, well, that's not a good strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much here that I think anyone who's listening to us seeking advice would probably go, now that makes more sense. And then probably go, but I haven't got money to invest. I've only got super, but there's still a place for advice, even if it's just your super, because there's so much that if you can hear us, there's so many complexities to just managing an investment strategy.
That's right. And I think if it is just advice around super, it's important for clients to know that usually that fee, if the advice is just around super, it can actually be paid from the super fund as well. So that's important to understand. I would hate for someone to think the cost of advice is, ruling them out of being able to afford advice, because, that's not the case. And what I have found 100% of the time, Amy, is that the return and the benefit to my client from having that financial advice outweighs the fee every single time.
I agree. I can't agree more. You agree with this as well, or maybe do this. I cringe a bit sometimes when I see influencers on Instagram and companies are trying to get, you to sign on and get a better deal with the super funds. And I go, there is a lot of credit to companies that actually are trying to help and do an SOA, but there are a lot out there that just really wanting just to sell their product. And you've got to be very careful. And is this advice? Is this licensed advice? Or, and I'm leaving my super fund to save money in fees. It's just so much more to it than that in terms of it being you might, you know, that old saying, you get what you pay for.
You do, 100%. You get what you pay for. And the benefits of advice, it, obviously, there's the quantitative benefit, right, where you can actually put a number on it, the improved returns, the savings on fees, the savings on tax, all of that. But you can't forget the qualitative benefits, the peace of mind, the knowing that I've made some really good decisions here, and when I reach retirement age, I should have this much money and I can live on this. You know, knowing that you've made the right decisions and you're in the right fund and you're doing the right things and you're contributing the right amount, knowing that you have all your ducks in a row, that's just invaluable, you know, that peace of mind, and you can get on with your life and not be worried and stressed about, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I going to have enough money? Will my money last in retirement? You have the answers to those questions.
Yeah, it's the what keeps you up at night question that us advisors often ask our clients. And sometimes they don't have the answer at first, but when they actually go down that path and do a strategy with an advisor and they work out their numbers, and a lot of clients actually don't even know their numbers, and that's okay. That's, you know, us bringing that to their attention to get this strategy in place is part of the process, right? It's usually during that process of working on the strategy with the client where we see, you know, their eyes light up, they see that the penny drop, that, you know, the recognition of, I don't have to worry about this anymore. Well, I can see that I'm on track, or, you know, this goal will be achieved, or I can do the trip overseas, or whatever it is that is exciting. You get to see the shift in somebody where, you know, it can be a short-term goal too. It doesn't, you know, need to be very long. I mean, we talk about super, and that is a long-term strategy, but there's also ways you could invest for short-term goals, medium-term goals as well, which is, again, when we talk about that risk profile and the time you're going to be investing for, so being more conservative or a balanced investor because you need the money in, say, 5 to 10 years versus 20 or 30 or a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So you started your business October?
October 2023. Yeah, after speaking to you, actually. So I've
listened to enough apps with, not just me, it was other advisors, but I liked that your homework, that was so important. That,
I spoke to a couple of different advisors who run their own businesses, some who ran their own business and then have now gone back to an employed role. And every person gave me a totally different, I guess, explanation of what it is like. And I found that really interesting. And what it made me realize is running a business is a different experience for everyone. And I'm not really going to learn from anyone else's experience other than my own. And my experience, again, is going to be different from yours and everyone else that I spoke to.
I'm so glad you came to that. It is a unique, like, financial plan, right? You see one client and on paper they could be identical to another, but because of their individual makeup, who they are, their personal experiences, their lifestyle, their values, their goals, it's completely different. And, you know, because of the conversations we're having with them, and it's a very different experience. You sit as go, I can't put myself in their shoes, but we can see by speaking to, say, Amy versus speaking to, was it Bianca? No? Who's the other person?
Let's say Bianca, yep.
Well, let's say Bianca. And then, you know, this situation's very different. They both have a similar goal. They might be the same age and with the same amount of money, but they're both very different human beings. And their experience coming to you, Nicole, would be completely, you know, incomparable. You can't do that. So I'm so glad that you sort of brought that in terms of your own experience starting a business. So I just want to touch base on some of the things you've learned outside of that amazing nugget. What have been the highs and lows in the last few months?
So one of the biggest challenges was getting a website designed. So for me, until I have a website, I don't feel like I have a business. And that's not true, because there are many people who have great businesses with no website. But for me, that was key, that online presence and credibility. And getting that website designed took a lot longer than I had expected. So I had to be very patient during that time. And then once the website was finished, like, ta-da, it's now online, that's great. But if no one is actually seeing the website, what is the point of it? So as a business owner, I now have to be across things like SEO and Google Ads, and trying to generate inquiries through, you know, Google and online searches. And I realized that there are some very large businesses in financial planning who spend a lot of money on Google Ads. And while I would love to spend that kind of money, it just doesn't make sense for a business of my size. And that's when I pivoted to the online. You know, posting on Instagram and TikTok has particularly been a great, I guess, outlet for client inquiry. And the best part about it is it's free. All it takes is, you know, a little bit of my time, 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there, talk about something that maybe came up with a client during the day, something that I think people would get value out of, record that, post it up. And yeah, that's going to be my strategy moving forward. I don't need to pay oodles and oodles of money to a marketing person for SEO and Google Ads, because I have got so much inquiry now. I am extremely happy, busy, full. Yeah, and I can kind of control it. I know that when I have enough work, I maybe stop posting for a couple of weeks. And then when I want the work to pick up again, I start posting again. Yeah, so that's been a big learning, is you don't need to pay heaps of money for Google. A lot of people, at the end of the day, they sit on their couch and they're scrolling social media. A lot of people from all walks of life. So it's really important not to have, I guess, a predisposed idea of, you know, who is on social media, because it is everyone. Everyone is on.
Yeah. And bringing back to your content, it's been so impressive. I've been, you know, I scroll, but I like supporting people that I know and what they're doing. And, you know, we met last year and I was like, great. So I started following you and I'm like, oh, this is fantastic content. I'm ashamed when it comes to my content because I'm not very good at that. But I strive to be better. I'm sort of trying to plan things out. I just sort of go, yeah, get busy. And then all of a sudden it's pushed by the wayside. So anyone who's following either of us would know, you know, Amy goes real quiet. That's probably because I'm in a busy period of work life and whatnot. So it gets challenging, but I agree. It's like financial planning when it comes to business. You've got to look at where it's worth putting your money, what's return of investment, and sometimes that's your time. And I mean, that education out there.
Yeah, I've had a few people ask me, you know, do I have a plan for my marketing and for my social media? There is no plan. There is no plan. It's just, what am I thinking about right in this moment? Let's turn on the camera and let's talk about it. And then I might edit out a few, you know, fumbles or pauses, but that's pretty much it. That's how it works.
With your experience with, you know, the clients you've seen over your career as well as now in your new business, you know, those little nuggets of truth fall into your lap that you can actually change the names, change the scenario and actually put out one thing that is actually relevant, because it's relevant to a client. It could be relevant to anyone else. There's so many ideas I wrote down for content. I never get it out there, but we'll get there one day. But also our budget's going to throw some more curveballs to us this year as well. Like the stage 3 tax and potentially increase our superannuation gaps. We know that super are with parental leave. Some positives there, which is cool. So we're never short of stuff we can talk about.
Yeah, never short of stuff we can talk about with all the changes. And I mean, that's another benefit of having a financial advisor, right? Because it is so hard to be across all the legislative changes. You know, the tax is always changing, you know, rules for super are always changing because the AWOTI figures were released and starting from next year, the caps for contributing to super have increased, you know, super now on paid parental leave. So things are always changing. And so as advisors, it's really part of our role is to be across all of those changes on behalf of our clients so that when they have their plan in place, and these things change that could benefit them or impact them, we can, you know, make adjustments as we go to the plan.
Absolutely. We book our clients in for contribution, you know, meetings before, you know, early June. We sort of do then our review meetings start again in August. So we sort of try and do that, block times out with our clients so that I'm not getting a last minute phone call on the week of the 30th of June going, what do I do with this savings? Should we put it in? Do I do it to super? You know, it's like my job now is training them, going, book your meeting now. Like, it's, we're in March. Get in, because you know, I want to make sure that you are making these. If you've got a chunk of money we want to do something with, we want to make the right decision for, you know, going forward, whether that is contribution advice. But I'm also excited for what comes in August, because that's going to change a lot of planning for people as well with the new tax rules, your tax, stage three tax.
Stage three tax.
Better words. But you've pointed out some really important things here, Nicole, in regards to why talk to people like yourselves. I think you've really articulated how important it is. And even if you wanted to dip your toe in and start investing, say, $100 a month when you're in your 20s, why maybe seeking an advisor or at least getting some direction? Sometimes it's hard with somebody who's starting and not like sort of getting a financial planner might be a bit out of their reach in terms of the whole holistic advice piece. But right. Getting at least started or listening to people like on a podcast going, okay, well, I can do $100 a month. Right. Now the question is, wow, where do I start? And I think it comes down to what you pointed out, the risk profile first.
And look, I think that's one of the key things is that if you are perhaps younger and, you know, the cost of financial advice is not, you know, I guess possible for you at this point in time, just educate yourself. Like you said, Amy, there are a million books and podcasts exactly like this one out there where you can, you know, educate yourself, learn about budgeting, learn about saving, learn about investing, learn about managing debt, learn as much as you can. But then the key thing is to, I guess, still take action, because education is great, but it is action that is actually going to get you some results. And I would even say it's better to take action, make a mistake, fail, learn from that mistake, pick yourself up and get back in and have another go. I honestly would rather someone have a go and make a mistake than never have a go at all, because you can only learn from your mistakes.
That is so true. And it can be a bit of a cost, but if you're starting small and you're just dipping your toe in, say, for example, you're in your 20s and you're going, look, I've got $100 a month that I can afford to invest. I'm going to go get a diversified all-in-one kind of ETF.
Yep.
Then there's many out there, by the way. And when I say all-in-one, it means that you're exposed to Australian markets and maybe international markets and maybe a little bit of that. You might be exposed to some sort of defensive or cash types of assets within that one ETF. And you might be able to just put $100 in your advance there and just chip away like Amy did in your story on Instagram. And where that could land you is pretty amazing. So it's a matter of then having that goal mindset of continuously doing that and being consistent.
Consistency and time. It's, you know, so important to get started early, invest often. I started investing really early when I was 20. Dumb luck, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, but I just started and it worked out really well. So that, you know, for anyone who's listening, get started. And like you said, there are plenty of really well diversified ETFs out there, managed funds. There's different, you know, apps that you can get started. And what I find is a lot of clients who have made that start on their own, when they get to, you know, their late 20s or their 30s, and they say to me, look, this is what I've done up until now. Where do I go from here? And that is great. They've started. They've made such a good decision just in starting. And I commend those people. And they get to that point. And things do start to become a bit more complex the more your investments grow. And that's the point usually where they seek advice.
Yeah. And some of those complexities are things like, for example, tax, you know, how things are owned. There's so many. We could open a can of worms in that. But again, demonstrating the value of that advice is imperative. One thing I wanted, there's so much I wanted to ask you here. There's one question I was going to ask first, and I forgot to, was what got you into the path of becoming a financial planner?
I started investing by accident when I was young. I moved out of home when I was 15 and I was renting. And I didn't like renting at all. I wasn't able to paint the walls. I couldn't have pets. So I saw an ad in the paper, because internet didn't exist. Well, it did, but really a thing. An ad in the paper that said, you can own your own home from as little as $2,000. So started saving up, managed to get my first property when I was 18. And for the next, I'd say, 5 to 6 years, I invested in property and property only, which was really great. Shortly after that, I started working in banking because I'd gone into the bank to find out about an investment loan. And I realized that I actually knew a bit more about how it works than the person who was helping me. And I thought maybe I could work in the bank, seeing as, you know, what I know about lending. And when I started working in the bank, I had my eyes open to all the different asset classes and the importance of diversification as part of risk management, because I was all in property only. And it occurred to me that if something goes wrong with property, all of my eggs are in the one basket. So I really learned about diversification. I started working with financial advisors in the banking world, and I loved it. I loved seeing the value and the way that we could help people make those smarter financial decisions to have better lives. The choices that they have, the freedom that they have, the ability to go on a holiday, the ability to, you know, help their family, help their children. I love that. You know, we only get one life. We want to live it, you know, as best as we can. And money is a tool that helps us, you know, make those choices and make those decisions. And I wanted to be a part of that. I want to help people live better lives. So I was working in banking. There was a lot of changes going on at the time with the Royal Commission. I started studying. I did have a very young child and I was pregnant with my second one, but I started my degree. So while working full-time, being a mother, I completed my bachelor degree. When I finished the bachelor degree, I spent a couple of months relaxing from studying, sitting on the couch, watching maths and scrolling Instagram. And I felt, what am I doing? I'm not done yet. And so I went back and did the master's degree with Kaplan. By that time, I had 3 kids. My husband was amazing, really supportive. And, you know, becoming an advisor at the time I chose to become an advisor is really tricky. There was a lot of new rules with FASEA. I had to complete a professional year. I had to sit the financial advisor exam. And look, getting someone to help me start the professional year was actually really challenging because most advice practices hadn't done it before. They didn't know what to do, how to do it, how's it going to work. So I had to basically present my case to my employer and say, look, I'm going to do all of these things. This is all that you guys have to do. Please help me with this. This is what I need to do. And they were on board. Did the professional year, worked for a few different firms, which was fantastic. I loved being an employed advisor, but as you can probably tell, I like a challenge and ready for the next thing, which is Stellar Wealth, and loving it.
Wow. Oh my God. That's amazing. You find, well, I'm gobsmacked because there's so much in there. Like, you've done incredibly well, and interesting that you brought up the professional year, because we're still at a point in this profession educating people on what that really means and what businesses need to be doing to bring up-and-coming advisors into the profession. And I hadn't even thought about it of once the legislation changed and that was a requirement, how people actually did go through that process, because for many businesses that was something that you didn't do, wasn't part of the process of bringing in a younger advisor. So it was kind of like, now, when I started in banking as well, but going into my first firm, you sort of start in one area and you kind of like work your way through the ranks. It's a very different experience to how it is now. And also, it is full time. And as a parent, as a mum with young children, it is incredibly challenging. I've spoken to other female advisors who haven't been able to do their professional year because of their demands at home and not being able to work full time and study on top. So it's a very big challenge, and well done to you for going through that, being one of the first.
Thank you. Well, I just want to add another key element to the story, and what keeps me motivated and what makes me seek challenges and just keep going. So my very first client was a lady called Donna. And so Donna had been married for 30 years. She'd been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease when she was only 42 years old. And upon her diagnosis, her marriage ended. So Donna never worked. She just stayed home and looked after the kids, which was the thing at that point in time. And so when Donna came to me, she was at a point where she had no savings of her own. She had no ability to earn any income off her own. She was practically homeless, that they'd sold the family home. She had no money from that. As she was battling Parkinson's disease, and she said, "Can you help me?" So I helped Donna. We got a disability pension set up for her. We had to look at some aged care living for her because of her medical condition. She wasn't able to do all the usual things that all of us take for granted: shower, get dressed, feed ourselves. She couldn't drive. She had lost a lot of friendships. She became socially isolated from not being able to drive. And I guess the key part for Donna was that her husband did have a very large super balance. And so through the family court system, we were able to get Donna some of that super, which helped her have a much better quality of life. But through that process, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, this woman who had done everything right, she'd been an amazing mother, and she was actually my mother, had been an amazing mother and done everything right, found herself in this horrible situation where she had, you know, no security and no financial independence. So it just spurs me on to make sure that that happens to as few other women as possible.
Oh my God. Yes. Wow. So is Donna your mum?
So Donna's my mum, yeah. And she passed away when she was 59, which is still quite young. But, you know, she just did what she thought was right, you know, staying home, looking after the kids, and to find herself in that situation, no money, no home, no ability to work. Yeah, I didn't want that to happen to anyone else. And I never take for granted my ability to earn an income, have my own financial independence, and use what I learned in the course of helping Donna to help as many people as possible. I don't want any women to be in that situation. Unfortunately, it still happens. Hopefully we can start to change that.
Absolutely. You've just sort of pulled some of my heartstrings there and got a bit emotional, actually. I'm the director of a charity that helps prevent female homelessness and helps women flee domestic violence. So those statistics are true, are real. Women are the highest demographic facing homelessness, women over 55, actually.
Yeah.
And that's something I think is one of those core motivators for many of us advisors. We sort of focus on that gender wealth gap, but I think a lot of female advisors also have a true awareness of that generation. They're, you know, we're our mothers, our grandmothers, they did give up their careers to raise us. There wasn't parental leave. There wasn't, you know, shared superannuation. It was very different. And while there's sort of many women are sort of isolated and facing the fact that they've been left behind financially. So that, I appreciate that you said that. Thank you. A little bit is a great motivating factor to why we do what we do. And I think that really brings everything home around what you do, why this podcast exists, you know, why many of us advisors have, you know, continued push forward despite the challenges, despite, you know, many losing huge amounts of income and such. I mean, those who are listening to us go, what are you guys talking about? But that's another podcast. But it is challenging even in our profession just to do what we're doing. But why we do it is, I guess, incredibly important. And I really appreciate that, Nicole.
My pleasure.
One more thing, and I know we're really on time. This is a much longer podcast than usual, but I can't go without asking three nuggets of wisdom around money, business, and life that you can share for us today.
My three nuggets. Look, nothing groundbreaking here, Amy. It's stuff that I'm sure everyone's heard before, and it's because it's true and it's so important. So nugget number one, spend less than you earn. Live within your means. Use your surplus to do something really good. Investing, working towards your future goals. Nugget number two, we spoke about this already, but invest early and invest often. Don't wait until you've done this or that or the other or the other. Just get started, even if it's a small amount. Nugget number three, educate yourself. Educate yourself. All of the tools are out there. Read books, listen to podcasts, speak to a financial advisor, go to a conference, go to a webinar. Educate yourself. Make good decisions.
Excellent. Yeah, educating yourself helps make good decisions. Thank you so much, Nicole. We can find you. Your website is stellarwealth. Is it .com.au?
Yep.
We'll put in the show notes. And don't forget to follow her on The Real Money Mama.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. My pleasure. Thanks for being here. You have a wonderful day. And whoever's listening, enjoy your day, whatever time that is, and be safe. Take care. Bye.
This has been the Sensibility Podcast. I'm Amy Baker, and if you want to learn more about today's topics, visit sensibility.net.au, where you'll find the episode show notes. And why not follow us on Instagram at sensible_Amy for regular nuggets of wisdom. We appreciate your support, and by showing us your support, please don't hesitate to rate us on Podchaser. Thanks for listening. Take care until next time, and remember to be sensible with your money. Bye.